panic at Israel's main international airport after a missile launched by Yemen's Iran-backed Houthi rebels penetrated Israel's sophisticated defense system, halting flights in and out of the country. Paramedics say four people were injured. The Hamas-allied Houthis have been firing at Israel and targets in the Red Sea since the war in Gaza began, triggered by Hamas's terror attack on October 7, 2023. And Israel has hit back, as has the United States. President Trump ordered large-scale attacks on Houthi targets in Yemen starting in March. Meanwhile, in Gaza, dozens of hostages are still in captivity as a nearly three-month-long Israeli blockade of aid continues. Life-saving supplies have largely run out, leaving thousands of children facing malnutrition and doctors like Bassam Zakout with no way of treating them.
Most of the children are waiting for some magic to save their lives.
And Israel seems set to expand its offensive in Gaza, Jerika, with plans to call up tens of thousands of reservists. And Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has vowed to retaliate for today's airport strike.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. That was a CBS News report. I just have one comment that I can't resist making, and that the reporter is so concerned about the children and the boycotts of supplies, which, you know, of course, on its face, we would all be concerned about that. But they are holding in Gaza 24 hostages still, as though they haven't suffered enough, as though the murders that they did on October the 7th weren't enough. They're holding those hostages. All they have to do is release them, and there will be no more blockades. But no. They would rather starve them to death and torture them. And that's what they're doing. So I don't have a lot of sympathy for the Gazans right now, led by Hamas. Today we're going to talk about that strike and what's going on in Israel. Are they going to war? I sort of think they might be. And I thought we should talk about it. You might wonder, some of you might not remember who the Houthis are. They're a rebel force within the country of Yemen, and they've been wreaking havoc in our seaways, oceanways, for a couple of years now, pirating and taking over huge vessels, stopping, you know, commerce for countries all over the world, just rebels, and intimidating even Americans because we had such horrific leadership here. But President Trump, what, 6 weeks ago, it seems, did a really thorough bombing of the Houthis. He ordered that, and it happened. And we thought they'd been devastated, but it sounds like because they got off some more bombs over the weekend and one actually hit the airport in Israel, that maybe it isn't over. So that's what we need to talk about. Why is Israel gearing up for war? Who are they planning on fighting? What is their goal? And then we're going to get also into Judea and Samaria, which are some of the most history-rich areas of just tombs and memorabilia, altars that were laid and established by the patriarchs and some of their, you know, their ancestors. It's history rich, Christian history, Jewish history. What's happening with that? We'll also talk about that on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7. And yes, that is what you're listening to. And this, yes, is Sandy Rios. And before we get to that discussion, as Mother's Day approaches, I wanted to highlight an organization that cares deeply for mothers. You probably know what's coming. Well, who is it? It's Preborn. Preborn's network of clinics exists exclusively to offer love, life, and support to pregnant mothers who are feeling scared and alone and are being pressured to make the ultimate choice that will not only sacrifice the life of their preborn baby, but take a piece of their own heart. When a distressed mom comes to Preborn, she's welcomed with open arms and offered a free ultrasound to hear and see the precious life inside her. And the majority of time, she will choose life. This Mother's Day, you can help bring life to both a mother in need and an at-risk baby. One ultrasound is only $28, but you know that. Do you know that five ultrasounds are $140? You see the endless possibilities of how much you can give. It just depends on what resources you have. But if you would like to help Preborn, if you haven't given before, Mother's Day is a good time to think about that. Some of you will look at Mother's Day with sorrow because some of you have chosen to abort a baby. And I just can't imagine. It's got to be. Remember that God can forgive you of anything. God can heal your broken heart. But as you think about this, it'd be probably a good idea to help preborn so that they can stop this from happening to other women who make bad choices when sometimes they're young. If you would like to help preborn, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Well, you can call us at 662-821-2040. You can write us at sandy@afr.net. You can listen to us on any podcast platform. Our home base is afr.net. That's AmericanFamilyRadio.net. But all other podcast platforms, Spotify, Apple, whatever you like, Amazon, whatever you listen through, we are there. You can find us on social media, all the platforms. You can follow me on X and my Twitter handle. Isn't that lovely? I remember when they used to start saying that, I thought it was so funny. I could hardly bring myself to saying it. And now I'm saying it. It's at Sandy Rios Tweet. That's at Sandy Rios Tweet. I'm really excited today because David Wormser is joining us. He's one of the leading experts on Israel and the Middle East. And our discussion is fascinating. You won't want to miss it on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
As far as the trade routes, obviously we're being challenged. The whole world is being challenged by the Houthis, including in the dastardly attack they did today near Ben Gurion Airport. We will not tolerate it. We will take very strong action against them. And we always remember that they act with their patron Iran's direction and support. We will do what we need to do to take care of our security, to respond effectively, and to give Iran a due warning that this cannot continue.
All right, that was the powerful voice of Prime Minister of Israel, Bibi Netanyahu. And he's responding, of course, to the news story we played at the top of the CBS report. The Houthis over the weekend attacked Israel. It was one successful bomb who actually got in the airspace or the locality of their airport. So it's very serious. And lots of things are happening in Israel, and they're actually calling up their reserves. So how serious is this? What did the Houthis intend to do? How did they manage to muster up another bomb when they had been bombed, we thought, into oblivion about a month ago? To discuss that with me is David Wormser. David is an American foreign policy specialist. He's really, honestly, worked for so many of the best organizations in Washington. I can't list all of them. But he serves currently as a senior fellow at the Center for Security Policy. He's been an advisor for the National Security Committee, the NSC, and also for a vice president. He is an expert. He is the go-to person, and I'm so glad to have this chance to talk to him this morning. Thanks for joining us, David.
Well, thanks. It's an honor and a pleasure.
Well, let's talk about the attack that took place over the weekend, David. I think it's pretty confusing, and I think also that Americans are not paying very much attention to Israel right now. And I want to change that, at least for my audience. So the Houthis, I thought we bombed them almost out of existence about a month ago. What's the story with that?
Well, we're really bombing them very heavily. You know, two aircraft carriers, multiple strikes per day, and they're not minor strikes. They're significant. But we are dealing with a very large country. It doesn't look that large on the map, but if you put it over the United States, it's like New York, Maine, Massachusetts, and so forth put together. So it's not like a Delaware-sized entity. And it's a lot of mountains. They have a lot of caves and stuff that they put their missiles in. So it's very difficult to completely eradicate their missile structure and their leadership. But, you know, the United States has done a tremendously powerful job in whittling them down. And the pace of missiles has gone way down from Yemen. They've been unable to stop any shipping, although the shipping is still, for insurance purposes, is more or less still stopped. But they've been unable physically to really knock out any ships yet. They have threatened a carrier significantly, but they threw everything they had on it on one surge attack. And they've been continuing to send missiles to Israel. About one to two a day has gotten to Israel. The Israeli air defense intercepts it either long before it gets to Israel or as it enters Israel. So there really haven't been any significant injuries or problems with any of these missiles until yesterday. And this one got through. And I think the initial investigation, it got through two layers. It got through, by the way, the Israeli aero system, which works out to 300 to 350 kilometers out. And then the SAD system, the American SAD system, is deployed there. There isn't a U.S. Troops that are deployed there with the SAD missiles. And it got through that, too. So it got through two layers of defense. The Israelis have done the investigation of the aero, and they say it's simply the missile malfunction. After shooting about 200, 300, 400 of these aero missiles, it's not the Iron Dome, the aero missile, a certain percentage won't work, and this unfortunately was one of them, and it hit in a very sensitive place. The SAD are still trying to figure out. It's possible that the aero kind of knocked it into a wobble, but didn't destroy it, and malfunctioned and didn't destroy it. And then in that wobble, the SAD couldn't quite pick up the wobbling pattern to knock it out. So there could have been some issue there, too, but we'll find out, and they'll fix it. And they're pretty confident they can get it fixed pretty quickly. But the larger issue is that now international airlines have stopped flying to Israel. And this is real point of what the Houthis are doing. Israel is a one-airport country for all intents and purposes in terms of international access to the country. So you shut that airport down, you shut flights going to that airport, you've essentially now cut Israel off from the world. Only Israeli airlines will fly in and out of Israel now, and they have only limited capacity. So it both affects mobilization. Israeli reserves need to get home from trips abroad. And foreigners can't come. The tourism trade now be killed from that. So this is a major strategic threat.
David, why? Can you be a little more specific? Is shut down just as a caution? Is it the Israeli government that has shut it down, or are airlines afraid to fly in there?
It's the latter. The airlines are afraid to fly in. Israelis are trying to convince them. Look, they got lucky with one missile. It didn't do that much. And it's really unlikely that anything else would threaten them. So far, no missile from Hamas, Hezbollah, or the Houthis have genuinely disrupted Israeli airport operations for more than an hour or two. So the Israelis are trying to convince the international airlines to come back and resume their flights within a week or even days. But unfortunately, those airlines just don't feel safe. Some of them are under political pressure. It's to some extent a little bit of a boycott. There are, like, Spain or Britain are perfectly happy to have their airlines boycott Israel at this point, unfortunately. So their airlines are pretty quick to pull the plug. But it's coming from the airlines, not Israel or the United States.
Well, that's interesting. I saw a report on Fox yesterday, and they were claiming that this was a new kind of weapon. At least that is, I don't know if they, yes, they did. They reported it as though, yes, it's a new kind of weapon that managed to get through the defenses, and now the Israelis have to figure out what that weapon is. So, if they're hearing things like that, even if they're doing this in good faith, they're hearing stuff like that. So I don't know. That's really tragic. I had no idea. All right. So the Houthis, though, the other part of the story is that they are always backed by Iran. And so I'm assuming Iran has helped them, breathe life into their circumstances. And what do we know about that, Iran's involvement in this bombing?
Well, the missiles are not built in Yemen. They don't have any capability of building anything like this, let alone developing a missile like that. These are Iranian missiles delivered from Iran. And in fact, the Yemenis have, or the Houthis have, no real ability to even train their crews to know how to shoot these missiles. This is something that they had to send Yemeni soldiers to Iran to essentially become Iranian IRGC guys that are embedded in the Yemeni military. They're Yemenis, they're part of the Yemeni military, but they're totally an Iranian structure. So these missiles are being shot both at the full support, supply chain support, deployment support, technical support, and ultimately with the political directive from Tehran. They are being the way to shut down the missiles. There's only really two ways. From the air, the Israelis found this out already in Gaza. You can only do so much from the air or from artillery. You have to eventually take the ground. And there are only two ways, therefore, you can stop the missiles from coming from Yemen, which is, one, Saudis and the Yemeni government, the Houthis are a rebellious entity within the Yemeni structure. The Yemeni government, the Saudis, and the UAE could resume their war against the Houthis and actually destroy them, taking the territory. Or alternatively, the guys who are pushing the buttons and making the Yemenis do it, the puppet master is Iran. So you take on Iran and you make it so that the Iranians don't want to pay the price anymore for their proxies' behavior in the Red Sea and against Israel. That's ultimately what Israelis are debating internally, which is, yes, they have to strike Yemen, and they have to strike it hard, because they have to establish the principle, the deterrence principle, Jewish blood can't be drawn cheaply. So if you strike Israel, you will be struck back. So they'll do something against Yemen. But the real issue and the real debate in Israel right now is, okay, this is one more reason why Israel really is chomping at the bit to go at Iran itself. And while they're giving the talks that the United States is having with Iran a chance, it's one more layer of pressure on the Israelis to just pull the plug and go after Iran. So you're seeing the pressure building on Israel to act.
Yeah, well, the Iranian talks with the United States are confusing. And look, these are very big questions I'm asking you. I realize this. Every nuance of this is huge. But in general, I did hear yesterday that President Trump has said he will not tolerate the Iran missile program nuclear program has to be dismantled. That's a non-negotiable, basically. That's what I read. So, is that a difference in what was perceived as America's position?
The Iranians felt that the United States had sort of backed off a bit, and when they said they would only accept the civilian nuclear program, they thought that meant that they could keep their enrichment to 3.67%, the enrichment cycle, which involves reprocessing of uranium and then centrifuges to bring uranium to a 3.67% purity. And then you can run fuel rods in nuclear reactors for that. But it's a ruse, because the ability to get to 3.67% is already half or three-quarters of the way to 90%. It's an exponential increase. Once you do it, you have the technology, you know what to do. But moreover, the amount of spinning of the centrifuges, with each round, the purity dramatically increases. It doesn't go, if you run it twice as long as 3.67%, you don't get to 7.3%. You get to like 30% or 50%. And if you run that even slightly more, you get to 90%. So it really is, if they have any enrichment capability, they have the breakout ability. And that's what the Israelis and the Americans now are saying is the absolute red line that they will not accept, because it doesn't help if Iran has 1 month ability to essentially get right back to where they are right now in a breakout capacity. But sanctions are lifted and an Israeli strike is taken off the table. The Iranians win big, because they can't all be reconstructed immediately. So the whole name of the game here for the Iranians is to drag this out and preserve their enrichment capacity, because that preserves their breakout capacity. And the Israelis saying, no, you can't do it. The United States now, that's very clear. It was not clear at the beginning, but it's very clear now.
Okay.
And second of all, the Israelis have these additional demands, too, which the United States still formally also has, which is the missile issue has to be dealt with, the terrorism regional proxy issue has to be dealt with, et cetera.
You know, okay, David, it just seems it's preposterous to me to think that the Iranians are going to sit down in good faith and negotiate these things. But nevertheless, it's happening. Fred Fleitz just had an article. It just came in my inbox. And the headline is that DNI Gabbard must reverse stupid U.S. intelligence on Iran's nuclear weapons program. And Fred's point is, according to the subtitle, the U.S. intelligence is still claiming that Iran has no active nuclear weapons program, despite stockpiles of near weapons grade uranium and evidence of covert weaponization efforts. So what do you know about that? He is saying our intelligence is totally off base on this. So do you agree with that?
I think the intelligence community is one of the deepest deep state structures, and that they have been playing policy for a long time. Intelligence was politicized already heavily in the 80s, and it got worse and worse and worse as we went along. That NIE that they're speaking about, the National Intelligence Estimate that they're speaking about, was something written by a group of people in the intelligence community that wanted to sabotage a tougher position that they were afraid President Bush 43 would take in 2005. So they issued this NIE that essentially said, well, they don't have a nuclear program, a weapons program. Yes, it's capable of it, but the decision has not been made to go weaponize it. Now, that was already, I was inside government at that time. That was political. That was not a genuine intelligence assessment. That was a political intelligence assessment. Number one. Number two, they then seized on this fatwa, this nuclear fatwa that supposedly Khamenei, the leader of Iran, put out that says that under Islam, under their form of Islam, you can't have a nuclear weapon. That fatwa never existed. But again, it's politically, there's the Washington establishment is so terrified of an escalation in Iran that they have been consistently seizing on anything and twisting it into this idea that somehow Iran is benign and it's not really doing anything. That should have all been put to bed, by the way, when Israelis showed up one day in Tehran and captured the nuclear archives, which had massive amounts of evidence that there was a weaponized nuclear program in Iran. So any doubt had been dispelled by that. But the IAEA said it, too. I mean, it's really almost unfathomable to conclude otherwise. So what the problem that Secretary Gabbard has, or Director Gabbard has, is that she has to rely on the intelligence community. She can't just invent intelligence. She can't just override them. But she needs to start installing people in the intelligence community who are going to essentially depoliticize it and actually go back to doing real intelligence work rather than manipulating intelligence for political stance within the government and then dictate to the government the positions they should take. Now, I know there's a lot of people who say, well, what did you guys do in Iraq? The truth is the intelligence community was not pushed. They were not pushed at all. I remember one meeting that I had. This was when Secretary Bolton was Undersecretary for Arms Control. He walked in. This was a month before the war, 2 months before the war. And he said, so what is your plan for combing the country to see what there is there? And the intelligence community head, who was in the meeting, said, we don't have a plan and we don't need a plan, because weapons of mass destruction elements are all over the country. We're going to be tripping over it. So we don't need any special structure to look for it. And I remember the shock that Secretary Bolton and I and Fred Fleitz was in the meeting too, had at that moment, which is, what do you mean you're just going to trip over it? First of all, we don't know what's there. Second of all, you don't know where it's been put. And third of all, are you so sure that it's just sitting all over the place and you're going to be so pervasive and present that you're just going to trip. For the intelligence community afterwards to say they were pushed to a conclusion is simply it's simply an invention that they used because they had the monopoly over what they could leak to the public. But the intelligence community was the one who's saying that. And the issue is, ever since then, they've been frightened that intelligence could drive another conflict. So they've been deliberately trying to interpret all intelligence to strip policymakers of the ability to have latitude in their judgments.
Wow.
And that's what Fred is reacting to.
That's amazing. And, you know, then we go into the Obama years, and this is really... I always blamed it on Obama because they covered up for Iran, and certainly he had his share of horrible guilt on Iran for giving them all kinds of money and just propping them up in ridiculous and really dangerous ways. So there was a denial going on that. But we expect, of course, from the Trump administration some truth. So I guess she needs to get some better people in there. I've heard this before on other conversations, David, but you're just affirming it, that he doesn't really maybe have the right people in place in there to give him the truth. But he did come to the conclusion that they can't have a nuclear, they have to dismantle their nuclear capabilities. So that was, somebody's talking to him, I guess. But let's go back to Israel.
Yeah.
Israel's been still, I don't know what the proper term, but they're bombing, they're still fighting, engaging in Gaza. And that was kind of stalled out because of the election and because of pressures, I guess, inside pressures Israel. So they've got Gaza still not settled. And now they have this thing with Iran. And we heard Bibi Netanyahu say, I believe he said in that clip we played, that they're going to call up the reserves. So what is Israel getting ready to do, David? What is their goal in gearing up? What do you think they're trying to do?
Well, there's still 24 apparently living hostages at most. And so the Israelis have stalled because they're trying to leverage their military position in order to extract the final hostages in some sort of a deal, willing to take quite a strategic hit to do so. But they're not willing to completely surrender, which is what Hamas's demands are, literally Israel surrender, that they give up every last inch. They commit to not touching Gaza, even when they see imminent attack. And all borders are open up for Hamas to rebuild and re-import a massive arsenal. And even then, they would give up only part of the hostages. And then at the end, when they're rebuilt, they would give up the remaining 10 or so hostages. So the Israelis said no to that, and they're trying to still extract more individuals, maybe 5 or 10 hostages, not the whole deal. But the point is that Hamas isn't buying, and this has resulted in about 4 months of stalling, 3 months of stalling, and the Israeli people and the Israeli government is fed up. And they're basically saying, okay, we've got to bring it to a decisive conclusion, which means a full reoccupation of Gaza, and then the Israelis assume responsibility for the area, and also that they can then effectively begin to implement the Trump plan, which is the voluntary exit of Palestinians who want to leave. Rather than do this Berlin Wall type thing where they're incarcerated in Gaza because Egypt and other countries don't want them to leave. American Israel always would be happy to let them leave if they want. And under humanitarian law, actually Egypt was required to allow them to set up in the Sinai next to Gaza to prevent them from being in the line of fire. And the Israelis were very much for that. But it's really the Egyptians, the Arab world, and all these people who supposedly are for the Palestinians want them incarcerated inside a war zone where they're in danger. And so what the occupation allows Israel to do is essentially, first of all, end the war zone. There's no more fighting for real. But second of all, that the Israelis assume control of the population so that if they want to leave through Israeli ports and leave through Israeli airports, they're free to do so, like every population. A Canadian can leave Canada if he wants, and so forth. And so that's the Israeli plan, is to take over Gaza, and then they'll figure out over the long term what the dispensation of the territory and the remaining population will be.
Are they calling up the reservists for that purpose then?
Yes, they're reaching the point where they have to act. They no longer can push this down the road. The remaining hostages are either going to be freed by a massive invasion, and then the holders of some of these hostages may cut their own deals with the oncoming Israeli forces. There are rewards of $5 million in safe passage out of Gaza if you help the Israelis get hostages out. So you can imagine some of the hostage takers or guards or so forth may say, look, I'm going to save my skin and give up the hostage. So the Israelis hope that this will also free hostages. But just sitting there like they are now, these hostages are suffering and they're going to die soon anyway. And so the Israelis really can't push this can down the road. They have to bring them home, and they have to give them one last chance to bring them home alive. And the only way they see that happening is now through a full invasion. And that's why they're calling up the reserves.
Okay. I have one last question for you. It's a little softer, but that is... Judea and Samaria, I know that there are tremendous efforts inside of Israel I'm kind of confused about who owns the West Bank right now. I think Israel gave that up. Correct me if I'm wrong. And Israel, forces in Israel, wants Judea and Samaria back. They have tremendous history for, you know, the patriarchs, lots of wonderful, like, memorials, and also it means a lot to Christians also. So what is the status of that?
Well, I'm glad you brought up the religious element. I mean, first of all, the dispensation of Judea and Samaria. The Israelis did give up, it's divided into three areas, the Area A, B, and C. The Israelis gave up full control of Area A. It's essentially an independent state, a Palestinian government with a Palestinian police force, which is really a Palestinian army, running everything in their lives all day. And that's a certain percentage of the territory. It's almost all the populated areas of Judea and Samaria. And that's under full Palestinian control. And therein lies the security threat, and it's a major security threat. Terrorism emanates from those areas. They have caught them trying to send missiles into Israel from those territories and so forth. Area B is sort of mixed. Israeli has overall security, but the Palestinians run it, and Palestinian police are there. And then Area C is under Israeli control. And they've been pushing. The Palestinian Authority has been seizing territory in Area C illegally to build new Palestinian areas. Now, the religious side is, unfortunately, Area A, being the populated area, is the populations were the result of long-term settlements of these cities over the last 3,000 years. So Nablus, you hear the word Nablus all the time, it's Shechem. It's the city of Shechem. Jenin is an ancient biblical city, too. Ramallah is basically Beth El, and Bethlehem is Bethlehem, and Hebron is Hebron. So unfortunately, the biblical heartland, the cradle of Jewish and Christian civilization, is unfortunately there, not in Area C. There are very important archaeological sites. And in Area A, what you're beginning to see is the Palestinian Authority is deliberately destroying the archaeological heritage deliberately, in order to erase the Jewish and therefore Christian roots in that land, to then turn around and come with their propaganda that there never was a Jewish presence, and there never was the presence any connection between the early Christians and the Jews at all. They're just trying to erase Jewish history. So, unfortunately, the most important archaeological sites are vulnerable to being erased forever by the
what do you cha- what do you think that sh- well so it sounds from your description I know we need to hurry I've kept you too long but okay. It sounds from your description of the circumstances that this is tougher than I even realized. I mean, because if the Palestinians are really getting aggressive and destroying those things, that's just so sickening, isn't it? The tombs of I don't even know Jacob, maybe I'm not sure who else. But so, again, I read what I read quickly. But they're not going to let that go easily. That sounds like a battle again, another fight to take over the West Bank, not just an agreement.
It is. It is another fight to take over the West Bank. That eventually, the way Israel has to go into Gaza, I think eventually they're going to have to go into Area A. They're now, you go to Nablus or Jenin. These are independent areas where they have Hamas and PLO troops that are fully and heavily armed fighting Israelis on the outside. So the Israelis, essentially, it's a, like mini Gazas all over the place. The second thing, I mean, like a good example, so people get a good feeling of it, the Joshua, when he came to the land of Israel, they set up an altar. Religious Christians will know, you know, the altar that is made of unhewn stones, etc. Well, they think they found that altar. Almost certainly it is the altar that Joshua set up. They even found a curse tablet there in ancient Hebrew from about 1400 B.C. By the way, that pushes the earlier, you know, there are two timelines to when the Jews entered Israel. This puts it to the earlier one. The curse tablet, which is exactly as the curse tablet should be, according to the Bible. So this is Joshua's altar. It is being destroyed and vandalized by the Palestinian Authority. This 2,800-year-old structure, what is it, 3,400-year-old structure.
Okay, so among all the things we talked about then, so just to ask you again, so you think that Bibi Netanyahu as the prime minister, and that I'm assuming, you know, in the United States, the president is the chief arbiter. He's the one who conducts the military operations. Does Netanyahu have that kind of power to instruct the army what to do?
No, okay. You go into a very deep subject. The problem Israel has is if you think the deep state in America is bad, if we're a pond, they're an ocean. The deep state in Israel has essentially stripped Israel's government of almost all authority. So Netanyahu really has to navigate very carefully. Now he's fighting it, and he's beginning to win it, and it's an unbelievable, but it's another front essentially in this war by Israel's left in coordination with the Biden administration, for example, heavily funded by USAID. They really undermined Israel's system and stripped Israel's government of real power so that the elected body of Israel doesn't really have the ability to act on what it was elected for. So Netanyahu does not have a lot of authority, as much authority as he really ought to have. A good example is the Trump plan. Trump had the plan for the voluntary leaving of Palestinians. Israel's government is fully on board and is setting up structures to do so. And all of a sudden, the Attorney General of the State of Israel, which is in Israel, like in every other country, the Attorney General is a political appointee. In Israel, they say the Attorney General is the law and therefore cannot be touched by the political establishment. What they say is law, not advice. They don't represent the government. They represent what this amorphous thing called the law, which means they essentially work for the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court itself says it's the law. It's not any more judicial activism. It's a legislative branch, essentially. They make up laws. So you have a structure there that completely handcuffs the Israeli government. This attorney general is now beginning to move to put forward a position that Israel cannot legally allow Palestinians from Gaza to leave. So you can see how surreal this becomes. Every Israeli soldier, every Israeli unit has a JAG Corps officer, a legal division officer on their back, watching every step they do. And it's terrifying for Israeli soldiers because they're not there to protect them. They're there to tell on them to international organizations like the ICC, and international organizations like Code Pink or the Hind Foundation or so forth. So this whole structure in Israel where the deep state has retreated into the legal branch and institutional control of universities and the military is something that has really bedeviled Prime Minister Netanyahu, and he's trying to break it down, and it's being broken down. But it's one of the reasons why this war has taken so long and so indecisive for many ways.
It's happening all over the world, David, in one form or another.
Yes.
It's happening all over the world. Well,
it's
I really do
war.
Appreciate
it. It's the same it, war.
It is, everywhere. Isn't it? I totally agree. Christians and Jews are the object of the hatred because our God is the object of the hatred. And, of course, the international forces want to control everything in the whole world. And they're really getting really good at that. And they're causing world leaders to have to step aside, even if they're the popular candidate. They're getting rid of people. It's just really an interesting time.
That's it. They have given up on democracy because they can't sell their agenda to the populations, whether it's in Europe or here or Israel. So they retreat into these institutional structures. I mean, for people who read communist literature like Antonio Gramsci, that's familiar. But basically, it's the institutional takeover so that they can overpower democracy when there's blowback and pushback and backlash. And that's what's happening everywhere, whether it's in Czechoslovakia or Hungary, or whether it's in the United
Korea,
States
Ireland.
With the election of President Trump.
Canada, it's just everywhere. It really, it's just amazing. Their reach is broad.
Israel's the same. There's this intertwined leftist structure that is really one coordinated assault on the concept of democracy and popular will inside the entire West. And Israel's the front line of that, too.
Yes. And interesting that you mentioned that USAID, who the president has ordered defunded, has funded all of these efforts around the globe under the guise of, you know, humanitarian care. It's such a lie. It's such a horrible thing. Even as I understand it, a lot of USAID money went to George Soros efforts to subvert countries in various places. It's really a nightmare. But you know what? We're making progress, David. And in spite of it, I don't know why, but I still feel encouraged. Yeah, I think so too.
We're going to win because we believe in something and the other side doesn't.
Well said. Absolutely. Well, David Wormser, again, as I don't need to say that you're a foreign policy specialist. I think you just demonstrated that. But he's a senior fellow for the Center for Security Policy and the National Treasure for his knowledge on all things Middle East. So, David, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Okay, God bless you.
You too. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Bye. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Well, Mother's Day is a time of joy. It is for me. It was always bittersweet for me because my first child, a daughter, was severely disabled. So it was always bittersweet. And for some of you, it may be bittersweet as well because perhaps you've aborted a baby. Or, you know, you could be a dad or a mom and say that. And remember Mother's Day as the day you could have had another child or a child for that matter. And that you actually made that decision and this might bring up some bad memories. Now, I always want to hasten to remind you that there's nothing God can't forgive. And if you still have real strong feelings, I think it's some healthy guilt is good. But if you still have some really healthy feelings of condemnation and you've prayed about it, you know that God can forgive. A lot of that accusation is from Satan himself, that long bony pointed finger that accuses you. He is the accuser. So I'm not recommending that. But as we approach this day, there are things, you know, first of all, understand that if you have asked for forgiveness and you meant it and you had remorse, you have been forgiven. But the rest of you who are enjoying this Mother's Day and you haven't had that situation in your life by God's grace, it's a good time to remember, you know, how precious babies are. They, oh my goodness, what I wouldn't give for another baby in my life, another grandchild. You know, I don't think I'll be having another baby, but it's just one of the greatest joys of life to have a little baby in your life. And so I want to say happy Mother's Day to all of you fellow mothers out there, and I encourage the rest of you. And that brings me to preborn, because they celebrate life every day by stopping women from making the terrible decision to take the life of their baby. I'm all about that, all about trying to prevent that, and so are they. And they do it by showing ultrasounds to women who are, you know, thinking about terminating their pregnancy. And it's very effective, because when they see the baby, they just realize, this is a really little person, and it's my baby, and I just can't do this. And so if you'd like to help in honor of this Mother's Day week, and maybe it's time to do something really special, and that's give to preborn. It's $28 for one ultrasound, and whatever multiple of that you can afford would be so greatly appreciated. Go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Well, Sandy Rios back with you. We were discussing with David Wormser Judea and Samaria. And so I did a quick search here so that I could be more specific about what biblical sites are there. The Tomb of the Patriarchs is there. And that's the burial place of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and their wives. And then there's Rachel's tomb. And she, of course, was the wife of Jacob. I was in Bethlehem several years ago before the Palestinians took it back. And it was fascinating. And we walked around freely, but now you can't do that because Palestinian Authority guard it carefully. And so it's not ours anymore, meaning ours to enjoy. Also, the Mount of Temptation, and that's the place where Jesus has said to have been tempted by Satan, is there in Samaria and Judea. And also the Judean Desert, that's where John the Baptist was out there eating locusts and honey and wearing animal skins and baptizing people. That's in that area too. Do you see? Also in Samaria, there's Mount Gerizim. And that is, that's a mountain that the woman at the well talks to Jesus about, that mountain. Then there's Shechem. That's an ancient city mentioned in the Bible. It's the site of where Abraham first entered the land. Then there's Shiloh, the site of the tabernacle and the Ark of the Covenant before Solomon's temple. And then there is Samaria, the capital of the northern kingdom of Israel, when there were two, you know, when Israel divided into Israel and Judah. So this was, Samaria was the capital city of the northern kingdom. So it's there. Elijah performed a lot of miracles in Dothan, and it's also there. Do you see how important? Do you see how horrible it is that the Palestinian authority, whatever authority, is tearing these things apart and defaming them? It's just heart-wrenching. And so we'll see what Bibi Netanyahu and the Israeli forces do. I hope they can stop this. I hope they can stop this. And it was such a foolish thing for Americans to advise them or force them, really, to give up territory in order to make some kind of an agreement. And during some of the negotiations with the Palestinians, during one of the many years that they tried to reach a peace agreement, and they did that. They gave it up, Judea and Samaria, and they've paid a huge price for that. And so let's just hope and pray they can get it back. Well, we learned a lot today, don't you think? I thought that was fascinating. And as we watch the headlines unfold, you're going to know, hopefully, a little bit more about what's happening. It wouldn't be possible for me to do this without our sponsors. And Timothy Plan is one of them. They show you how to put your money where your values are and discover how to be a biblically. Now, doesn't that mean something now? Biblical. We're talking about the biblical land, the biblical sites, the standards, precepts of Scripture, the Ten Commandments, the teachings of the law, the prophets. how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Well, thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.